Fan on Demand. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you, coming to you from Toronto. Finally, Jones, as we get a chance to do this show back home in TO as we head into the All-Star Weekend in the National Basketball Association. And a lot of Toronto Raptors will be taking part in New Orleans with DeMar DeRozan suiting up in the All-Star game for the first time in his career. He will be in the game that tips off on Sunday at 8 o'clock Eastern again in New Orleans. But the festivities will get underway for DeRozan on Saturday night when he actually takes place in the Skills Challenge. And his teammate, Terrence Ross, will be competing in the Slam Dunk Competition, the Sprite Slam Dunk Contest, as he defends his title from last year. But the party gets started, I suppose, for all of the All-Stars and for the Toronto All-Stars, I suppose, when you talk about the Rookies and Sophomores and the Rising Stars Challenge on Friday night. And that's when Jonas Valanciunas, Jonesy, will be in action for the Toronto Raptors. So, again, Valanciunas, Ross, DeRozan sprinkled all over All-Star Weekend. And no doubt it's going to be a good time down in the Crescent City. If you have not had a chance to visit New Orleans, I don't know if you'll be able to get down now for the All-Star Weekend, but it's definitely a place you're going to want to check out at some point. Put it on the bucket list, and not just because of Bourbon Street, but the people, the food, the culture, the French Quarter, and of course, Jonesy, Café du Monde, the coffee and the beignets. You've got to go to New Orleans at some point in your life. But before we get to a lot of the All-Star talk, I know you touched on this a little bit in this interview we're about to hear, Jonesy, but let's look back at the unofficial first half, and I kind of put that in quotations, first half. It's actually the first 50-plus games. But let's look back at the first half of the season for the Toronto Raptors as they go into the All-Star break with the second highest win total in franchise history, and four games above 500. Jonesy, here's your one-on-one with Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey.
So, Coach, I know you're not one to always look forward, but before we look forward, let's look back. What surprised you about the first part of the season when you think about it? Everybody looked at, you know, predictions down the road, where you might be, where you could be, but what surprised you about the first part of the season?
Was it our growth? We're growing at a faster rate than I expected. I think anyone expected, and which is a good thing. Guys have developed. Guys have improved. Their game has grown. You know, we're not where we going to be. I think still, again, I continue to preach it. Learning to play the physical playoff style basketball is something we're going to have to get used to. We're not there yet. And when teams do that to us, that's when we struggle. But once we do that, that's when I think we will have arrived. But I think that's something that only time is going to help, because we can talk about it, preach about it, but until guys go through it game after game, is the only time they're going to get used to it and adjust to it.
Coach, and everybody kind of forgets this, you won in the West, but when you guys won in Dallas and you were in charge of the defense, you were not a typical Western Conference run-up-and-down team. I was there at the final. I look at the way Jason Terry played, and he scored his offense, but he was physical. Jason Kidd was a physical defender. You had Tyson Chandler. You had Deshaun Stevenson. That's something that I think sometimes people forget about, the fact that you guys won that in spite of Dirk. You guys won that with defense.
No question. And that's what the winning the playoff, being a playoff team, is all about. All the 100-point games and all the high-scoring games go out the window the closer you get to being a playoff team or playing against other playoff teams. It's not that. And all these games that we're playing now that are 100-plus games are not the style that we need to learn how to play. If we're going to be able to score, I don't think we can do that, but one thing that's going to suffer is your defense. Your defense erodes a little bit, and that's what has happened to us. I think we've gotten caught up into that style of play early in the year, right before the break. And so we got to get back to our pace, a pace that is conducive to getting back and playing defense, getting the guys locked down, having energy to play defense, and having a defensive focus. And those are some of the things that have slipped in the last week or so. And we got to get back to that after the break, because after the break, everything is heightened going into the last part of the season.
What do you think has caused that slippage? I mean, it's a million-dollar question for every coach, but is it seriously, is it success? Is it the fact that
no,
you guys have been able to
we
win another way?
We, we've won three games above 500.
Right.
So we really success. I mean, how you measure for us success? Yes, because we're better than what we were last year.
Okay.
But we're still growing. We haven't reached anything. So it can't. I think it's getting caught up in the offensive game, up and down type game, the fast paced game.
Which is easy to play.
It's not hard. You know, you score, I score. And you get that mentality instead of coming down, executing, milking the play, making sure we get the next option, not bouncing it, playing in one spot and then jacking up a shot. Now they run to the other end, you don't get back in transition or you don't contain the ball. So I think we've gotten caught up in that moment. And the other thing, too, and it's small but it's big, is practice time.
Right.
We have not had a serious practice. We've had probably two serious practices in the month of January. And that's not enough time to spend. And it's because of the game schedule. You know, do you expend that energy in practice or we expend as much as we can in practice, but you can't get enough done to hone up on your defense, style of play, the physicality, because we had so many games in the month of January and the schedule was like day off game, so many days in January.
Coach, individually, you talked about the way the team has grown. Individually, who's really shown you in terms of growth? Hey, man, I'm surprised. I'm pleasantly pleased with the way X player has grown. It could be more than one.
We got more than one. DeMar's first. I think if you had said at the beginning of the year that he was going to be an all-star, somebody would probably think you drinking alcohol or whatever. But
yeah.
He's grown. He's getting better. He's developed into a go-to player. He's still not a finished product yet. Terrence Ross has grown. He's improved. He's gotten more serious about the game. Jonas has gotten better. You know, those three guys, I think, have grown and are developing at a good rate. And those are pleasantly surprised of how much they've improved
right.
so quickly.
Right. And you're doing, as I keep saying, you got that rare double-double going. You're winning and you're developing. And
that's a hard thing.
Normally, those two don't go hand in hand.
No, they don't. And that's the thing that's happened. You know, you got one 5-year player in DeMar,
right.
and then two second-year players in those guys. And so, again, we're not finished yet. We're still growing. We're still developing. We still have to teach. We still have to coach them up. And that's what we're going to continue to do.
All-star break. What will you tell your guys heading to New Orleans? Jonas, Terrence, DeMar, particularly in the game. You've been part of all-star games. What will you say? Hey, kid, I want you to do this because it's going to help us when you come back.
Well, I've been in it a couple of times. We coached one in New York and one in San Antonio. But the key thing is get your rest. You know, let all the hoopla happen around you. But, again, stay focused on that because you have another, 30-plus games to go. So you got to keep your focus on the end of the season, what we got to do as a team, what you have to do to help the team. Most of all, get your rest. Don't hang out because those three days or 4 days of hanging, getting past the bedtime and not getting your sleep will tell on you the next week and next couple weeks and you never can catch up. So because our games are coming at a rapid-fire pace after the break.
What does a coach do on the All-Star break? I know it's not exactly rest and relaxation for you. You're away from the team, but the wheels are still spinning.
We'll still be preparing, trying to come up, watch some games that we had trouble in, figure out some things that are going with our team. Again, I think the main thing with us is guys getting rest and, getting productivity from our second unit is going to be huge, not losing these leads, guys coming in and be productive. I mean, you get that. One thing that helped us win some games was our bench was productive. And now we're not as productive as we were. And I think this fatigue, the euphoria of the trade has worn off a little bit. So now we got to get ramped back up again to get ready for the second half of the season.
Last thing before we go, Coach, how much will you watch All-Star Weekend and take it in yourself as a fan?
I watch our players. I watch our guys if they're participating in something because I want to support them and pull for them because they deserve it. You know how hard they've worked in the summer. So I'll support them as much as possible. But again, my mind and thoughts are going to be going into this stretch run and knowing how difficult and how tough it's going to be.
That was the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, Dwayne Casey, one of the newest players to join the Toronto Raptors. Not so new anymore, I suppose, as the trade that ultimately sent Rudy Gay, Quincy Acey, and Aaron Gray to Sacramento came more than 2 months ago now. But John Sommans, Gravis Vasquez, Patrick Patterson, and Chuck Hayes came to town, and I had a chance to hook up with, again, one of the new guys, Jonesy, not so new anymore, but Chuck Hayes has had an instant impact on this team, and not as much on the floor, perhaps, as in the locker room. I mean, his impact on the floor, especially over the last few weeks, has been noticeable when you factor in the injury that sent Tyler Hansbrough to the sidelines for 10-plus games. Chuck Hayes suddenly found himself in the rotation where he was probably the one that was used the least when those four players from Sacramento first came to T.O. He started to play more, but from day one and right up until this point as well, he's been a vocal leader in the locker room and a voice for this team and a major piece to many of the reasons why Toronto is four games above 500 at this point going into the All-Star break. I had a chance to chat for a few minutes with veteran forward, Raptor forward, Chuck Hayes.
Chuck, John was saying last week, I believe actually in Sacramento, kind of reflecting back to the trade, that the couple of times he's been dealt so far in his career, it's worked out every time. He said Milwaukee, Chicago, and now Toronto. And he said that the one thing that he kind of put his finger on each time was the locker room and going into a locker room where it was just good guys and it just was a good fit from the beginning. Is that kind of the way you see it in terms of this locker room and just why the chemistry has been so good from the beginning?
Yeah, this is a great locker room. You got good guys. You got all the egos are checked at the door. You got unselfish players. It's just great. It's competitive. It's a competitive spirit. It's an uplifting spirit and an energy to the locker room. And it's fun to be a part of.
Correct me if I'm wrong. There's times where they say that if there's too many good guys, that can almost be a bad thing because oftentimes maybe good guys gets mixed with nice guys and you want a little bit of edge. You know what I mean? But am I wrong in thinking that just because it's good in the locker room doesn't mean that there isn't edge on the floor and that there isn't, you know, accountability?
Yeah, I don't believe in that. Like, as long as you got good guys in this locker room, we don't have to be the dirtiest players. We just got to be competitive in one unit. And I don't believe in that. You need to have a hot head in the locker room or anything like that. And I do believe good guys can finish, you know, in a great place.
Is the chemistry in the locker room part of the reason why you've been able to, from the beginning, I'm sure it's part of your personality to some degree, but from the beginning, been able to have a voice, even with a brand new team, where you've, you know, I think you said, even, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the first couple of weeks where you came in and said, hey, you know, I'm not shy to give my opinion or to talk about certain guys, and you've gone with it.
I'm the second oldest on the team. I've been in a lot of games. I've been around some great veterans and great teammates, so, yeah, I'm going to speak my opinion. You rather can take it as constructive criticism, you can take it as something negative, but I'm going to uplift my teammates, and whatever I can give them a psychological edge or mental edge on the game or the opponent, I'm going to do it.
I guess you got to kind of know, though, your teammates, that they're going to be receptive to something like that, right?
Yeah, I get the hint that everybody is. There's nobody in here with give somebody a cold shoulder or whatnot, yeah, or some hard feelings, but, yeah, it's good. It's fine.
When you look at this team and the way that it's kind of come together that quickly, aside from the chemistry in the locker room, on the floor, what's making it work? What has this team done in the 2 months you've been here to kind of turn around that slow start they had?
I mean, we're fighters. Everybody knows their role, and we're going to fight. We're going to fight. We're going to rely on each other. We're going to trust each other and try to sneak out as many wins as possible.
Is it the defense or is it both ends of the floor?
Both ends of the floor. It's execution, defense, knowing your personnel. It's a lot. It's a combination of a lot of things.
I know the answer to this. I'll ask it anyways, though. Is it rubbing off on other guys, too? You know, some guys see somebody else working, somebody else bringing it, and you know that you've got to raise your level.
I just think it's professionalism. You know, you have a job to do. You got to do it at the highest level. Could guys be feeding off energy off another player? Absolutely, but We all have a job to do. We all got to do our work.
That was Raptors veteran forward Chuck Hayes. And Jonesy, before we go ahead and talk more about the All-Star weekend and the festivities ahead for DeRozan, for Ross, for Valanciunas, we continue to look back at the unofficial first half of the season. The Raptors going into the All-Star break with a record of 28-24. Jonesy, you had a chance to chat right off the bat with the head coach of the Raptors, Dwayne Casey. I went one-on-one and got the perspective from one of the lead assistants of the Raptors, a man that you see regularly on the television broadcast as well, Raptors assistant coach Tom Stoerner. Tom, when you look back at these first 50-odd games, it's been quite the turnaround over the last 2 months ever since the trade. I guess, you know, kind of in an honest moment. You're always honest with us. Did you really think at 6-12 that you'd be sitting here, you know, a few games above 500 and in first place in the division and staring down the final 30-odd games of the year with the playoffs on the horizon?
There was probably a concern somewhere in that first 18 games or 12 games, whatever you're talking about here. Yeah, there was a concern, sure, that we would not be in a position we're in now. But post-trade, you know, we've created more depth on our roster, and so we have a better cohesive team now than what we did early in the year.
It's funny that it doesn't seem to happen a lot in pro sports where both teams benefit from a trade. Mm-hmm. And though Sacramento's record hasn't necessarily turned, Rudy has certainly been a lot better since going to the Kings. They seem to enjoy what they're getting from him, at least for now. And there's no denying the impact that the four guys have had here, especially Patrick, and he might be the biggest revelation of all in coming to the team and really rejuvenating his career.
Sure. I agree with you. And like I say, you want every trade to be a win-win. You want trades to be something that benefits both teams. And like I say, Rudy's a terrific player, and he fits it a little bit more, I think, in there. And a lot of times that's what it is. We had Steve Kerr in Orlando. I'm going to go back. We had Steve Kerr in Orlando. And we tried to make him into a point guard, and it really didn't work out. He got traded to the Chicago Bulls. The rest is history.
Right.
You know, it just happened to be, didn't work real well for the Orlando Magic, but he worked real well with the Chicago Bulls and got a couple championships. So it's not necessarily that the player's anything different. It's just how he fits in with the chemistry of that particular group on that particular team. And you can look through the history of the NBA, and that pretty much will pan out in a lot of situations.
You know, it's interesting you say that as well, because this is coming from a coach on the team, folks. I've been saying for last couple of months here, it's not that Rudy and Kyle are best friends. They're each other's respective, you know, godfathers to their children. Rudy and DeMar were really tight off the floor, so it wasn't a chemistry issue. It was just on the floor, for whatever reason, it wasn't clicking.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with chemistry. Our guys got along.
Yeah.
We've got good guys here. We've had good guys here all year long, and Rudy certainly didn't mess with the chemistry. That wasn't the issue. Sometimes it's just style. You know, sometimes it's just how the pieces fit on the basketball court, and there were no issues. All right, from a chemistry standpoint, with any of those guys, it's just our team plays better now. And sometimes that's hard to figure out. Why is that? It just is, you know, and so you run with it, you know.
How much of the turnaround has been, I'm not going to say a return to defense, but maybe because of the chemistry, because of the depth, the defense has been able to get back to where it was a couple of years ago and maybe to the point where you and Dwayne and the coaching staff needed it and wanted it to be?
Well, I think our guys have bought in and they're really following the plan. I mean, they have come in and really they have a mindset and a feel. John Salmons has a feel for defense. Chuck Hayes has a feel for defense. So does Pat. And Greaves pretty good too. So what we added to the team were four guys who have a mindset for defense. And because of that, collectively, it makes your team that much better. You had four guys who can think about that on the floor and can work. You know, John and Chuck really have a good chemistry together defensively. You know, that we've even added a coverage because of those two guys that are here that we didn't have before. So that has also added to it, and we've been able to take out certain plays and certain players, you know, in games that we couldn't before.
John was saying last week, I think it was actually when we were in Sacramento and he was looking back on the trade, he said it's the third time he's been dealt, and for whatever reason, and he certainly was not taking any credit, he said for whatever reason, every time it's worked out. He said when he went to Chicago when he went to Milwaukee, now when he's come to Toronto.
Right.
And he said the intangible that he believes is the locker room and the chemistry. And I mean, you've been around enough teams to know that I guess if you go to the wrong situation, the chemistry's not there, it's not going to work. But he said for whatever reason, for him, it's worked out every time where he went into a locker room where it was good guys that just clicked right away.
Well, I'll take it back to when I was a younger coach in the league and working. Again, a lot of my experience comes from Orlando. I make reference to that often. But Pat Williams, who was the general manager for Orlando, general manager in basketball and in baseball, said the hardest thing to achieve in any pro sport is chemistry. He said, but once you have it, man, you better bottle it and hold on to it. And that is so true with the group of guys that we have right now. The chemistry that they have developed, there's a camaraderie. There's a willingness for guys now to step up. In 3 years that I've been here prior to the trade, I've never heard a guy get on another player. Now I'm hearing that, but it's not done in negative ways. Like, we need you. And they're vocal, and they're talking to one another, and that's so neat to see. And it happens so very few times in professional sports, because they're all worried about they're damaging somebody's ego. Well, they don't have that right now. These guys all get along, and they can talk to each other, and they can get on one another in a very positive way, and it's not taken personally.
It seems like, and I don't mean to single out one guy, I'm sure we could go through the whole list, but it seems like there's been such a noticeable change in that, what you were just speaking of, with Kyle. Not that he was a bad dude, per se, last year, but right. The difference in him as a person and a player this year versus last year in terms of the leadership role that he seems to have really, truly, finally taken on is night and day.
Well, I think he's learning that, you just like coaches, we have to know who we can get on and who we can't, or how we approach a player. We don't let anything slide, but the way you approach people is different. And I think Kyle's finally learning that as well. Like, you can't just go scream at a guy every time, because some guys don't respond to that. Some guys withdraw into a shell. Other guys may say, yeah, I'm gonna fight through that. And I think he's learning who he can. I think he's starting to develop a relationship with all the guys on the team in a professional way, so that he can get the most out of them.
Yeah.
All right, because he is in a leadership role. You know, he and DeMar are the two guys that have grabbed that leadership role right now, and that's new for DeMar. Because DeMar was never in that role, per se, in the past. It was always other guys, more veteran players. Well, now DeMar is becoming a veteran player, and he's learning to be a leader as well.
All right, we're going to see DeMar featured quite a bit this weekend in the All-Star festivities, not only on Saturday night in the skills competition, but the game itself on Sunday. What about his growth and maturity as a person, as a player? I said this before, I often maybe get accused of being a little too fluffy, but I felt that maybe the greatest change was becoming a father, and how that just changes your perspective on a lot of things about what you're living for, let alone what you're playing for and going to work for every day. And maybe that's made him a better player overall as well. And here he is now, first time ever as an All-Star.
Well, I thought he came back this year focused at the defensive end, where prior 2 years, I'll go back to year one, he and I get into it a little bit one game. It was actually in Cleveland, and because I was getting on him about his lack of defensive focus. He has come back this year with a defensive mindset. Now, you know, every night that, you know, sometimes people are going to look at him and say, well, what are you talking about? Some nights, they're, you know, you have a tough night. But by and large, he's more focused defensively. He has taken less bad shots than what he did prior to in previous years. I think he's becoming a better pro. And that's the hard thing people have to understand. It takes time to become a good pro. He's had some guidance from Rudy, you know, when he was here. I think Rudy was good for him in terms of talking to him a little bit more about that. I think he saw a guy who was a high-volume shooter in Rudy Gay and the shots he took. So now I think he's becoming more selective. I think he's becoming more of an all-around player. He's focusing on his defense. He's being able to make plays for other guys now. He is an all-star, in a sense, because he has developed his game and he's continuing to grow. Is he there yet? No. But he's on his way.
Well, and the fact that he's got to do it while still also being the go-to guy offensively and put up 20-plus a night, I mean, that's got to take a lot out of you.
That takes a lot out of you. And that's why we want him to be a performer at both ends of the floor. He, you know, all the great ones, you know, go back some of these guys. Kobe Bryant was all defensive team, yep, as well as all offensive team. So that message constantly gets sent to him from the coaching staff. You know, I know guys work with him individually. We're constantly talking about being a complete player, not a one-dimensional player. A guy can put up numbers, but a guy who can make guys better on the floor and defend as well as put up points.
Okay, to that point, last question for you then, to touch on the other two guys at All-Star Weekend, Terrence Ross and Jonas Valanciunas. This is kind of a long-winded question here, but both of those guys in the starting lineup. So a lot of what you're doing sort of flies in the face of what you should not be able to do, and that's win and develop at the same time, right? With two sophomores in the starting lineup. I think too often maybe some folks are caught up in the offensive numbers with Terrence. And forget about the night he had 51, but well, he's not scoring enough. He's not doing enough. But you don't look at the other end of the floor, and he's often guarding the toughest guy, the best shooter, the best offensive player. And then from that standpoint too, Jonas, I mean, the guy's been pretty steady all year. He's had a couple little ups and downs, but for the most part, he's hovering pretty close to averaging a double-double and really kind of learning on the fly as a 21-year-old big man.
Everybody has to understand, we want them. We've talked about this as our staff and with management. Everybody wants these guys to be a mature player. These guys are second year in the league. Most of these guys have never heard about coverages or NBA defense or how you got to run plays offensively, much less know the guys they're playing against. They're learning all this stuff, and it takes time. we have to. The one thing you can't do is over evaluate from the standpoint of looking what they've done in the past 2 years. You've got to see the growth and development, and each one of these guys has gotten better. Terrence certainly has to accept a different role now because he guards the toughest guy. That 2-3 spot every night, he's guarding that guy. And some nights that's a guy who can beat you off the dribble. Some nights it's a catch and shoot guy. Some nights it's a guy who can score in multitudes of ways. So he's got to learn to be able to play those guys, play the variety, as well as go out and perform at the offensive end. Jonas, it takes big. Look at Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert didn't become Roy Hibbert for at least 5 years. And so we're expecting Jonas to be that in his second year. It takes time. Big guys take longer. So his growth and development is off the charts in terms of a guy who's been in the league 2 years.
That was Raptors assistant coach Tom Stirner. When we come back on Hoops, you will hear from Hall of Famer and Raptors senior advisor Wayne Embry, and also Raptors assistant coach and former NBA All-Star Jamal McGlure. It's all up next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you, coming to you from Toronto as we finally get a chance to do the show back on home soil. The Raptors entering the All-Star break at 28-24. Jonesy not in action until Tuesday, when Toronto will be in Washington to face the Wizards. The Raptors 4 games above 500, sitting in first place in the Atlantic Division. So life is pretty good right now. As again, I mentioned earlier in the show, the Raptors with the second highest win total in franchise history at the All-Star break, sitting with these 28 wins. This weekend in New Orleans, it's the NBA All-Star weekend. Terrence Ross competing in the slam dunk competition, DeMar DeRozan in the skills challenge, and the game itself on Sunday. And on Friday evening, the events get started with Jonas Valanciunas taking part in the Rising Stars Challenge, the rookie sophomore game. So a lot of Raptors sprinkled across New Orleans this weekend. One man who played in New Orleans, played a long time in the NBA, and also played in the NBA All-Star game. And as you're about to find out right now, if you didn't know, came probably, Jonesy, that close, and I know you brought this up with him, to winning the MVP of the All-Star game in his lone appearance as well. Raptors assistant coach, former All-Star, Jamal McGlure.
Jamal, not lost in all of this, for me anyway, watching you as a high schooler and then through your years at Kentucky and watching you grow up through this, was the fact that you played in the All-Star game. DeMar's going for the first time. It's a first All-Star weekend for Jonas, a guy who you've worked with a lot. Terrence is now his second appearance as a contest participant, but not as a guy in the game. What's it like when you go to the game?
It's a great feeling to be honored, whether you're playing in the rookie game, competing in the dunk-off, or the All-Star game. Being a part of All-Star weekend is something very few people get the opportunity to do, and they should all feel very proud of themselves.
What are you going to tell the guys? I know you got a message for each one of them before they leave, particularly Jonas, because for him, I mean, you think about international players watching the NBA All-Star game, it's the big deal. Now he's going to be a part of it. What will you tell DeMar? What will you tell Terrence? And what will you tell Jonas?
Just to go down there and have fun. Mind you, it's All-Star weekend. It's You're not competing for anything other than bragging rights. So go and have fun, enjoy yourself, and enjoy the time that you have with your family and friends.
What's your lasting memory of All-Star Game, Jamal?
My lasting memory is just, again, having the opportunity to have my mother and father come and see me play in the All-Star Game, and the feeling that they had.
Mm-hmm. When you were in that game, and we talk about this all the time, at one point, a lot of people, consensus was, had the East won that game, you might have had a shot at MVP.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun playing the game. Going in there, you don't have the mindset that you're going to get the MVP. You go out there to score and impress the fans, and I had an opportunity to do that, and that's one of the lasting memories I have of this wonderful league we call the NBA.
When you were there the weekend, who were some of the stars, quote-unquote, that made an impression on you?
Well, it was in L.A., so there was everybody. Everybody yeah. And more. Seeing Jack and, seeing the Wayne brothers. And just an opportunity to play with the likes of and against guys like Shaq and Kobe, playing with Jermaine O'Neal and Ron Artest, Iverson, some of the greats. I was definitely humbled.
What did they have to say to you? Those guys you talk about, you know, being out on the floor with the likes of Shaq and, you know, Kobe was there, and all of these guys that are, you know, they're icons, they're stars, and you're in there as this one of the, you know, one of the stars. What did they have to say to you? What did you guys talk about? What was it like in the locker room in terms of that camaraderie that suddenly you're thrown together as a group and you have to perform?
We spent a lot of time having fun and joking. It wasn't something that we took serious. We just wanted to go and put on a show for the fans and enjoy ourselves at the same time, because 3 or 4 days later we got to go back to the grind, and it's a totally different situation at that point.
Are you in touch with any of those guys still? Do you ever relive? I mean, for some of them, there have been many All-Star games, but for some of the guys that have had only a few, do you relive some of that and chat about it when you get a chance to see them? Does it ever come up?
No, we don't particularly talk about the All-Star game, but we are now friends that we might not have been if it wasn't for the All-Star game. And when I see them is when we talk about how we're doing presently.
How much will you watch the Raptor guys down there? How much will you tune into All-Star Weekend? Because I know you're a fan of the game. You watch games as well. How much will you tune in and check out what they're doing?
I definitely will. I'm curious to see how Jonas will do and DeMar, it being their first time. And, you know, I'm a Toronto Raptor for life, so I want to encourage our guys in any way, shape, or form to do well at all times.
Yeah. Have you prepared Jonas? I mean, sometimes as a big guy, you know, guards get their hands on the ball in those kinds of games, and it's up and down, and you might not see it. You prepared him for that a little bit?
Not yet. I think he'll get a rude awakening, but he'll have an opportunity to score and impress the fans as well.
And last thing, Charles Barkley just terrified, butchered his name. Jonas said when he goes down there, he's going to teach him. Any words for him as he approaches Charles?
Teach him. If it's anything like his golf swing, I could see it being really bad.
That was Raptors assistant coach, former NBA All-Star Jamal McGlure. Jonesy, great chat with Jamal, and I know you had a chance to catch up with Raptors senior advisor Wayne Embry. We're going to get to that in a second. And folks, I got to say, listen, we could talk all you want about the All-Star Weekend coming up in New Orleans. We could give you, you know, our crazy predictions on who's going to win the Rising Stars Challenge, who's going to win the MVP of that rookie sophomore game, who might win the various skill challenge, the three-point shootout, the dunk contest, and everything else. But really, do you want to hear our bold predictions and our prognostications? I mean, that's all subjective. The game itself is going to play out on Sunday. It's going to be an extravaganza. There are going to be some people that wake up Monday and say that was terrible. There are going to be some people that say it's great. It is what it is. It's the All-Star Weekend. It's a chance to shine the spotlight, period. We're just going to leave it at that, Jonesy. How about we actually enlighten some folks, especially maybe some of the younger listeners, on the history of the game, the history of the league, and perhaps even the history of the All-Star Game? That's what you did when you went one-on-one with Raptors senior advisor and NBA Hall of Famer Wayne Embry.
Wayne, a big anniversary. The All-Star Game, there's a lot of hoopla. I always say it's the world's best pickup game, but you got to be invited. And once upon a time, you were invited, but it's very different than it was years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a bit different. You know, years ago, I'm not sure we even had 12 players on the team as they do now. I think we just had 10 players on each team. And the one I remember most is, and we're going to get into this, this is the 50th anniversary for the All-Star game, where the players threatened to not play the game, and was the first nationally televised game for an All-Star game, and threatened not to play it unless the owners recognized our union. And but the most important component of that was the players' pension plan.
Wayne, let's get into that then. You know, and that's one of the things. It's been out there. It's the 50th anniversary of it. You were in that dressing room, that All-Star game, when players decided, hey, we're going to make a stand here. There had to have been a little bit of tension in there, and give us the feeling in there, what was going on.
Well, there was quite a bit of tension, and Paul, let me tell you, I wasn't as secure as some of the superstars that were on the team. I was happy to be an All-Star, but
Certainly I was not Bill Russell or Oscar Robertson or Wilt Chamberlain or any of those guys, Elgin Baylor, Jerry West. But let me just pause and back up a minute and tell you our plight of getting there.
Right.
We had a game in Cincinnati on Saturday night, and we were to leave Sunday to go to Boston. And because of a snowstorm on the East Coast, we were diverted from going to Boston to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we stayed there that Sunday night and all day Monday because nothing had opened up on the East Coast until Tuesday morning, Washington, D.C. finally opened. And so we flew into Washington in time to take a train to get to Boston. Got to Boston.
We're not talking charter here.
No, we're not talking charter. Right? Remember, and let me reemphasize, took a train because, you know, it was quite prevalent back in those days as well. And we got to Boston about 5 o'clock in the evening, and Tommy Heinsohn and Bob Cousy were waiting for us in the lobby of the hotel and says, fellas, here's what's happened. We're going to bring up to date what's happened with our union and the ability to convince the owners that the players need the pension plan. And so he says they've not been agreeable, and we've been working on it we've been working on it all afternoon. We've been working on getting a pension plan all afternoon, and they've rejected thus far. So our plan is to meet, and we recommend that we vote to not play the game.
Wow.
that kind of knocked the wind out of us because we had no idea. I didn't have a clue what was going on. And so we convened in the one locker room. And both teams convened in one locker room, and the owners some of the owners were standing outside the door. And commissioner kept coming in and threatening. And a couple of the owners came in and threatened their players. That they'd better play or otherwise they were history.
And you were one of those guys that was feeling that threat. As you said, you weren't Elgin Baylor or Wilt or Oscar or Cousy or one of those guys.
That's right. I was really very much insecure. And so I was reluctant to vote in favor of not playing. But as it turned out, after minutes and the clock's ticking all the while, the clock is ticking. And it got down to where we had about 5 minutes before game time, and Walter Kennedy came in. He was perspiring, sweating, and he says, fellas, you got to get your pension. He said, we decided then to go because we had taken a vote, and it was 18-2 not to play the game. And what was really, ironic about the whole thing, I said the vote was 18-2. Wilt Chamberlain was one of the players that voted to play.
Wow! Yeah.
But it was quite contentious, and it was the start of the union. But most important, it got the players a pension, which you know you're looking through the. It was a defining moment in the history of the NBA, from the players' perspective, but also from the management perspective too, because they finally did what was right. Because, see, Paul, remember, back in those days, we were getting $8 a day meal money and didn't have a pension. You know, you play 10 years, 11 years, you had nothing. And so the pension became a reality and I think the league's better for it.
That was Raptors senior advisor and NBA Hall of Famer Wayne Embry. And actually, Jones, your conversation continued, but we're going to be honest here, folks. We ran into a bit of a technical issue with some of the recordings that we were doing for that interview. Luckily, we were able to recover the recordings and recovered the audio. However, it is a little bit muffled. It is a little bit garbly here, but it is absolutely audible. You'll still be able to hear it. The quality just isn't as fantastic. So for the continuation of the history lesson and the continuation of that interview, here's more from Jonesy one-on-one with senior advisor and NBA Hall of Famer Wayne Embry.
That's a terrific story about basically the beginning of the Players Association and the pension.
Do these young guys understand the depth and what you guys went through to pave the way for them?
You know what? I regretfully say no, I don't think so. You would think that there would have been more of an effort to have a better acknowledgement or to have a commemoration grand scale at the All-Star game, and I was disappointed that they were a little behind in recognizing it, and so nothing really significant has been planned. However, there will be some sort of commemoration. Bob Pettit, who was in the room, lives in the Louisiana area, and I think he's going to be there, but I don't anticipate many of those guys who are in the room are going to be there. And that's sad because, that is a very defining moment in the history of the NBA, particularly the race to the players. Now, ironically, I go on the management side in later life, but I have to still acknowledge that the significance of that event because, players were making $8 a day meal money. Salaries were not even a fraction of what they are today.
Yeah.
And it was a bold move on the player's part to take that stand. But as I said, I think it's been good for the NBA as it relates to, obviously, you have to have player relations. And, unions are tough. I've been in boardrooms where, you have the concern. I was in the McDonald's business where we had the concern about unionization. But when something as great as the NBA and as good as it has become for the owners as well as the players, it was a pretty good thing for everybody, I think.
Wayne, last thing before we go, how did that impact you in your dealings as a general manager? I mean, you were a trailblazer, a pioneer there as the first African-American GM in any of the major sports, really, in that sense, to have that kind of control. How did it impact you when you had to deal with players, agents, knowing that you'd kind of help lay the groundwork for what they were doing, and you're now on the other side?
Well, I think it worked to my advantage because I could use that with the agents, right. And they respected the fact that we were pioneers in a sense in developing, creating the union. And, I think the thing that's helped me in my management career is that I have sensitivities toward the players.
Right, right.
And at the same time, know when the breakoff has to be. And, of course, I had to deal with the Oscar Robertson suit, which is also a defining moment as it relates to the players.
Yeah.
And managed through the lockouts and that. And I think I could be a voice of reason to the players as well as the ownership because the idea is to have everything calibrated to where everybody benefits. And if everybody benefits, then it's a great league and has become a great league. And so I look back at 1964 and all the events that have taken place since then, and that was a very, very important time.
That was Raptors senior advisor and NBA Hall of Famer Wayne Embry. Again, we apologize for the audio. It was messed up a little bit, but we were lucky that we were able to recover that portion of the interview so that we could bring it to you, and I'm sure you were still able to hear it. It was still audible, even though it wasn't maybe as fantastic as some of the other stuff in terms of the audio quality. But one last time, folks, NBA All-Star Weekend this weekend in New Orleans with DeMar DeRozan taking part in the All-Star game for the first time ever in his career on Sunday night, the fourth Raptor in franchise history to play in the All-Star game behind Vince Carter, Chris Bosh, and Antonio Davis. On Saturday night, DeMar takes part in the Skills Challenge as well. Teammate Terrence Ross will be defending his Slam Dunk Championship in the Sprite Slam Dunk competition on Saturday night. And on Friday, Jonas Valanciunas taking part in the rookie sophomore game, the Rising Stars Challenge. So that is All-Star Weekend. We will talk about the All-Star Weekend on next Thursday's Hoop Show. But by then, the Raptors will have already been on the floor for two games, one against Washington on Tuesday and another on Wednesday at home against the Chicago Bulls. So it is a whirlwind of activity in just 7 days. We're back again next Thursday. Paul Jones, Eric Smith, Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.